Foundationsforthearts.org.
Good morning. Welcome to Radioactivity. I'm Rob Lori. Coming up today, we're going to hear Florida This Week from this past Friday night. We'll get the latest on the elections here in Florida. Later on, I want to open up the phone lines and talk about the recent hate crimes and terrorism that's been plaguing the U.S. and talk about the reasons why you think it seems to be getting worse. We'll talk about that later on in the program. But first, Florida This Week, as we listen back to this program, which airs on the PBS station WEDU-TV on Friday nights, you can email your comments about the show into the studio here. I'll read them after we hear the replay of the show for about 25 minutes or so. And our address here is dj@wmnf.org. Here's Florida This Week that features a panel usually comprised of one Democrat, one Republican, and either a couple of professors or a couple of journalists. So here is Florida This Week from this past Friday night. Coming up next, the two major party candidates for governor meet in their final debate and fill the time with a sometimes out-of-control series of attacks. Republicans are now supporting a key provision of Obamacare. The attorney general candidates appear in their only televised debate. And Governor Scott may have made money from the state's troubled SunPass system. Political Insights next on Florida This Week.
From the WEDU studios, this is Florida This Week. And now, moderator Rob Lori.
Welcome back. This week our panelists are Jessica Ehrlich is an attorney and a Democrat. Darrell Paulson is the professor emeritus of government at USF St. Petersburg. Ernest Hooper is a columnist for the Tampa Bay Times and the host of That's All I'm Saying on WEDU. And Travis Horn is the director of business and PR at S3 Media and a Republican. Well, it's great to have you here. Thank you for coming. Well, during their second and final gubernatorial debate Wednesday, Democratic Tallahassee Mayor Andrew Gillum called Republican former U.S. Congressman Ron DeSantis a liar who should be disqualified from being elected. DeSantis called Gillum corrupt and on the take. Those themes emerged several times through the fiery hour-long debate in which the candidates clashed on education, crime, guns, the economy, and health care. One of the early questions was about reports that Gillum had received free tickets to the Broadway play Hamilton from an undercover FBI agent.
He wouldn't accept responsibility for getting a $1,000 ticket from an undercover FBI agent. At last debate, we now know that he lied about that. At some point, you got to demonstrate leadership and accept responsibility for what you've done.
I arrived at the theater and received my ticket from my brother. The problem that I have is that I should have asked more questions to make sure that everything that had transpired was above board.
Another area that brought strong disagreement was DeSantis' alleged association with racists.
Here's my question.
He hadn't even made those statements then.
Yes, he had, sir. The first statement was made many years ago.
How the hell am I supposed to know every single statement somebody makes? Here's the deal. Let me just say this straight up. I've lived my life, whether it's athletics, whether it's military, whether it's serving as a prosecutor. You know, when I was downrange in Iraq, we worked together as a team, regardless of race. We had the American flag on our arm. We wore the same uniform, and we fought for the country.
Say, my grandmother used to say, a hit dog will holler. And it hollered through this room. Mr. DeSantis has spoken. First of all, he's got neo-Nazis helping him out in the state. He has spoken at racist conferences. He's accepted a contribution and would not return it from someone who referred to the former president of the United States as a Muslim, N-I-G-G-E-R. When asked to return that money, he said no. He's using that money to now fund negative ads. Now, I'm not calling Mr. DeSantis a racist. I'm simply saying the racists believe he's a racist.
Darrell, let's start with that. Racism, that's a pretty tough charge. Did Gillum land a serious blow there when he made that charge against...
Well, I'm sure his supporters loved it. As you heard the clapping in the background, he evoked that racial
charged several different times, you know, when he accused many of these personal attacks that DeSantis leveled against Gillum, and he brought out the race issue once again and saying, you want to stereotype me like a typical black man sort of thing. So that racial thing came out. But we've had two gubernatorial debates. The first one by Jake Tapper of CNN was sort of a model of what should be done in debates. He got pointed questions, he got out of the way, he let the candidates have their say. And he didn't try to be the main show. The second debate was terrible. The moderator got in the way. He lost control of the candidates. He lost control of the crowds. I mean, many people who have heard the second debate and nothing else would probably say, you know, it's somewhat of a shame that these are the only two candidates we have to choose from. What, because there was one personal attack after another.
Was there a clear winner, do you think, in that debate?
I don't see how you can have a clear winner. I mean, because this was just the sort of thing to reinforce your own supporters in this debate. I mean, these attack lines played well with your supporters, and so the supporters loved the DeSantis attack on Gillum, you know, Gillum not being really truthful. In fact, the Tampa Bay Times attacked him on that, so he's got to clean the air on this issue. They've supported his campaign. But, you know, they say voters don't tolerate lies or fibs, and so that's going to be his biggest problem, you know, are people thinking that he's not going to tell the truth. So I don't think it swayed anybody one way or the other, moved somebody from one way to the other. The only thing it might have done is convince voters to stay home.
Oh, let's hope that doesn't happen. Travis, what'd you make of the debate?
Look, Gillum loves his canine references, but, you know, I'm an old country boy from Kissimmee, and I'll tell you, there's one you might have heard before. It's That Dog Don't Hunt. Bill Clinton used to love that one. Throwing this race card out, people, the voters, I feel like you're alienating the middle when you do this, not just Republican voters, but as a Republican voter, as a staunch supporter of Ron DeSantis, I feel like you're branding us racist because there's some racists that'll vote for you. It's nonsense.
Well, I don't think that's the case here. This whole campaign started with the very first thing that DeSantis said was going on Fox News and talking about monkeying up the race and monkeying up this election. It was a clear, this goes back to the dog whistles and the comments that go on or whatever. He started it, he's brought it up, he's had repeated attacks, and it's been a theme throughout this. So he can't stand back and say he has clean hands, that he has disavowed this, or that in any way he's come out and said, I didn't mean that, it's not true. It just simply hasn't happened. And so there is no way from those comments that Gillum is calling all Republicans racist. That is not the case whatsoever, and it's very clear. But he is saying that there are undertones here. It's the same thing with DeSantis referring to Gillum, not by Mr. Mayor or Mr. Gillum, but calling him Andrew. That's not acceptable either in these situations.
DeSantis,
you call someone the congressman,
the
or you call them mayor. You do not call them by their first name unless you're trying to refer to them as boy.
Travis, go ahead.
DeSantis came out and decried the monkey it up comment as being anything racist. He made that pretty clear from the start. That was silly. The voters think that's silly, and I think the voters will show that they think that's silly on Election Day.
I actually think the ambiguity involved in some of these comments is intentional. And here's how it works. You say something that isn't blatantly racist, but can be debated. And it leads a certain segment of voters who don't think they're racist to say, oh my God, political correctness, run amok, I gotta get behind DeSantis, or I'll be the next person to be victimized by this. And I think it's very intentional. I think it's a political strategy. I don't think this was a slip of the tongue by DeSantis, nor do I think it's a direct appeal to the most racist people in this state. It's a middle segment that has grown weary of political correctness.
The question really came up because David Horowitz, who's a very conservative guy who sponsors conferences around the country, invited a couple of racists to several of his conferences, the same conferences that DeSantis attended. So the question is, can you blame DeSantis for attending conferences where out-and-out racists appear? What do you think?
Well, I think you can bring it up as an issue. I think anytime you have someone trying to become the first African-American governor in the state of Florida, race and how each candidate feels about race is going to be discussed. It's going to be a factor in helping people decide on who to vote for. It can't be dismissed.
And it's insulting to Republican voters out there to imply that because he said the term monkey. I've never heard the term monkey up. I've heard monkey around. I've heard different variations.
Well, I'm not saying he's racist.
To suggest that there's some sort of conspiracy he vaguely said it.
Strategy.
It's just nonsense.
That was
too.
The problem with this debate.
It's
though.
A
it was
poor
missed
strategy.
Opportunities all around, primarily because of a terrible moderator. The Florida Supreme Court has just ruled that the next governor of Florida will get to make appointments to the Florida Supreme Court, the vacancies that will occur. There was no question
about
that.
No question about it.
Nobody asked that. It's a big policy issue.
Nobody asked about transportation.
So we don't know anything about, a lot about where these candidates stand on the major public policy issues confronting Florida, but we know that they don't like one another.
All right, what about Gillum and allegedly taking money from this undercover FBI agent? We know he probably took money to go to Hamilton, and maybe he took extra money to help him in his one of his campaign events in Tallahassee. Well, didn't report that money. Is this going to hurt Gillum?
Darrell's saying that the electorate doesn't like people who lie. I think we may be changing on that. I think there's becoming a greater tolerance for misdeeds of candidates. And you can start with President Trump and see that a lot was overlooked in his 2016 campaign to get into the White House. And if you want to, you can go as far back as Bill Clinton and his misgivings.
All right, Travis, what do you think about that? Has President Trump set a new standard for what we consider to be crossing the line?
I don't think that. That's almost like, you know, the old, you stop beating your wife. I mean, that's not a winning argument to talk about. I mean, I don't think that the electorate wants to see people lie. Again, I've got an optimistic viewpoint of the intelligence of our people. I mean, information is more available than it's ever been to voters. I'll let them make the call, but...
Well, we twice elected a governor that appeared to defraud.
I mean, it goes to your question about Gillum. If someone offers me and hands me a $500 theater ticket, I'm going to ask who paid for it.
Yeah.
And I'm going to say, I'd like to at least send you a thank you note.
Well, the tickets to Hamilton were $450 to $1,400. So I don't know how expensive his ticket was. We don't know where he sat. But he said he was vindicated by what came out, but I'm not sure how he was vindicated. He also took a trip to Costa Rica, where he said he paid back the $400 expenses. Well, the hotel room was $1,400 a night, and it was a three-night stay. So...
I mean, that's without the government discount or whatever else happens. I mean, voters, I think, are actually, they expect politicians to lie. I think that's unfortunate and sad, but it is. They don't expect everyone to be telling the truth all the time. So there's that level. Then there's, as Gillum himself tweeted, we got 99 problems and Hamilton ain't one of them. So, I mean, he thought that his brother had traded the tickets for some Jay-Z Beyonce tickets, which are also incredibly expensive for while they're there. Generally, when having staffed and worked for members of Congress and in this thing before, there are different rules for congressional levels than there are for state in terms of what you're allowed to accept and not accept. And you rely on your staff most of the time to set these things up and make sure that everything has already been cleared before you get there. So I'm sure he did expect that his brother on some Hamilton tickets, he wasn't like, well, now where did these come from? Trace the chain back all the way for me so I know what happened. I mean, that's just standard.
Now, so far, there have been no charges filed against Gillum. But isn't the question whether or not Gillum changed a vote or helped some sort of project in Tallahassee in exchange for these tickets or the trip to Costa Rica or this help with this campaign fundraiser? I mean, the question is, did Gillum give something to developers who wanted something?
I mean, that's what the FBI was looking into, right, whether he was on the take for that. But, they were investigating for him for something. And we don't know that there's an ongoing investigation right now, but we do know that the Florida Ethics Commission is looking into Gillum. So that's a fact. We know that.
He was a surprise candidate, quite frankly. I mean, other Democrats didn't bring up this charges because nobody thought that Gillum would emerge from that field of Democratic candidates as a choice in the general election. So that was a real surprise. So I think he would have been better off if the charge had been raised during the primary contest, so it could have been diffused at that point rather than to wait for it to come up in the general election.
Okay. Well, with the election a little bit more than a week away and reports that voting for this midterm is way up from 4 years ago, candidates have to make their closing arguments right now.
Republicans across the country have taken to saying that they support a key benefit of the Affordable Care Act, or Obamacare, covering people with pre-existing conditions. Here's a new ad from Governor Rick Scott, who's in a close battle for the U.S. Senate seat with Bill Nelson.
I want to tell you about a family with a pre-existing health condition. They grew up in public housing, rarely saw a doctor. One of the kids had a hip disease. Their mom would drive 200 miles to a charity hospital to get him treatment. That was my family growing up. I support forcing insurance companies to cover pre-existing conditions. For Senator Nelson, it's just another political issue. But for me, it's personal. I'm Rick Scott, and I approve this message.
Scott says he's in favor of preserving pre-existing condition protections, but he's also a longtime supporter of total repeal of Obamacare, the law that protects people with pre-existing conditions. Democrats also came out with their own health care ad this week.
Governor Scott, I survived bilateral breast cancer, but only because I had health insurance. Without it, I'd be dead, and my children wouldn't have a mother. You supported letting insurance companies gut protections for people with pre-existing conditions, and that's why I will never support you. You put your political party over doing what's right. Mr. Scott, this may be just politics to you, but to me, it's my life.
SMP is responsible for the content of this ad.
Jessica, around the country, it's not just here in Florida, but around the country, Republicans are now saying they want to protect pre-existing conditions for people. What do you think of that?
Well, it's really come out, and we've seen this just in the last even 48 hours from the president talking about prescription drug costs as well, because in all the polling across the country, and particularly in the Midwest with white working class voters, their biggest issue is health care and pre-existing conditions and the cost of prescription drugs. They've seen this everywhere, and it's hurting them not only in Florida, where we have millions of voters who are on Medicare who rely on these benefits, but also across the country in the Midwest and all the way out into the far West. So this is something that has become a last minute focus as they're trying to combat what everyone has talked about being the blue wave.
All right, so is it possible to repeal Obamacare and then put back in pre-existing condition protections and keep premiums low? Travis, what do you think?
Of course it is.
How would they do it?
Well, you do it exactly like you said. We repeal it and replace it, just like the president's been saying all along. I don't know a Republican or a Democrat who's opposed to the pre-existing condition.
But so far, with the Republican Congress and a Republican president, no bill has been entered in Congress that would do just that. That was the promise.
We haven't gotten it done.
Little disingenuous because the bill that did come out of the House that went to the Senate and failed there because of people like Senator John McCain was not covering pre-existing conditions. That was their replacement bill that they put forth that they thought they had the votes for, which they didn't, and it didn't cover pre-existing conditions, when this outcry happened.
Just this week, President Trump said he totally supports, in his words, he would totally protect pre-existing conditions. It was his administration that went to court to try and throw out that provision of the ACA that covered pre-existing conditions. What's changed is public attitudes. Public attitudes about the American Health Care Act. 53% of Americans now support the Democrats handling health care, and only 35% support the Republicans handling that. 49% support the ACA, and only 42% oppose the ACA. So that's a complete reversal of attitude. So this is why Democrats are stressing health care and especially pre-existing conditions. It's also why Republicans suddenly have fallen in love with pre-existing conditions.
I think it's more of a scare tactic. They pull it. The Democrats have pulled the numbers on their side. They see it's an issue, and
The Republicans have pulled this because I'm talking about it nonstop on national television regarding this exact thing, and the Republicans are the ones saying this is an issue.
Yeah, it's definitely an issue. It's actually reflected in the popularity of TV shows. You see these shows about these maverick doctors fighting the system and trying to give the best health care to their patients and going against the insurance companies. We see it everywhere. It's definitely an issue. And the reason it's become a problem for the Republican Party is because they've been hell-bent on erasing President Obama's legacy, even if it means taken away something that every voter loves.
Healthcare is going to come up in our next segment. The two candidates for Attorney General, Republican Ashley Moody and Democrat Sean Shaw, met for the first and only debate this week. Moody is a judge and a former prosecutor. Shaw is an attorney and a former state House member and was once the state's insurance advocate. Here's a sample.
Florida has now joined in a lawsuit along with other states to repeal Obamacare. If you win, and we'll start with Ms. Moody, will you continue with that lawsuit?
Yes, that lawsuit is about pushing back on Washington overreach into affairs that the state has traditionally regulated.
How do you cover people with pre-existing conditions then?
So that, let me be clear, I support people being covered that have pre-existing conditions. I support access to health care.
Either you're going to hold up the law or you're not. And this is a great example of where this is a law where she's not going to uphold it. The minute I'm elected, Florida will leave this partisan lawsuit to end the Affordable Care Act that has already been found to be constitutional multiple times. I believe that only Republican attorneys general around this country have filed this lawsuit.
Stand Your Ground deals with self-defense, both before when there was a duty to retreat and now. These are difficult issues, and there are cases that will, unique facts and circumstances that will always push the envelope in for the fact finder in trying to decide whether there was reasonable justification for defense.
I don't agree with any of it, and I'm going to tell you why. The parents of Marquise McLaughlin would tell you that the system is not working. They would tell you that they wish they had their boy that was defending his family in that parking lot. And the video I saw was disgusting. It ought not be the law of Florida that that's okay.
Erz, let's start with health care, the health care part of that debate. Ashley Moody said that she wants to continue the lawsuit to try to overturn the ACA, the one that Pam Bondi has signed on to. What do you think?
Well, I've known Judge Moody for a while, and it's much, very much like we saw with Attorney General Bondi. We know this person, we like this person, and then when they get into this political arena, they begin to get pulled in different directions because they have to answer to the partisan views and policies of their party. And I think that's what's happening with her. If she really believes in protecting pre-existing conditions, she should pull out of that suit. And the governor should ask.
It does seem that if the suit is successful, there's no replacement legislation right now.
There's more to selecting an attorney general than this particular case. If you want someone who's a blatant partisan pick, then pick Representative Daryl Shaw. If you want someone who's got a legal background and actually tries cases and can stand up for our state in court, then pick Ashley Moody.
Jessica, Ashley Moody views herself as the incoming state prosecutor if she becomes the attorney general. Shaw views himself more as a consumer advocate and an advocate for the people. What's the best role? What should the attorney general of Florida be?
Well, first of all, his name is Sean Shaw, yep. Not Daryl Shaw.
Thank you.
Second of all, he has been involved. His father was actually on the Supreme Court of the state of Florida. He's been an attorney in Tampa for many years and was in the insurance commissioner's office. So he's not, and in the state House of Representatives. So he's not only familiar with the law and what needs to be done in terms of the administration, that the attorney general is part of their role to oversee it. The attorney general is not just a prosecutor. They're not the one per se going in front of judges bringing cases themselves personally. They're there to organize and make sure that the department is run to enforce the laws that we have in the state of Florida and that it's running smoothly.
They do go in front of judges, and forgive me for confusing his first name. I wanted to make sure to address him as representative first because I didn't want to send a dog whistle or anything like that.
All right, we're almost out of time. The Tampa Bay Times reported this week that Governor Rick Scott has financial ties to the vendor that operates the troubled SunPass toll collection system. Scott's financial link to the SunPass vendor is at least the seventh reported example of the wealthy governor's personal investments in corporations that do business with or are regulated by the state he governs. The governor appoints the head of the Florida Department of Transportation, which oversees the state's tollway system. Private investments made by the Scott family have raised alarms before about a possible conflict of interest between the governor's official duties and his personal life. Other investments that oppose conflict of interest potential involve health care, a high-speed rail system, a natural gas pipeline, prescription drugs, mosquito control, and an oil services company. Travis, we only have 20 seconds. You get the last word on this. Does the governor have a conflict of interest?
Hey, I'm more concerned about politicians like Gillum taking tickets because, I'll tell you what, Rick Scott's made his money. He's a successful businessman. I'm not worried about him trying to skim a few dollars. He's not doing it. His money's in a blind trust. He's put in the blind trust from the start of his first gubernatorial campaign, and I don't trust the Times reporting on this
issue.
And
you don't think there's a conflict of
interest? It's not a very blind trust, we'll say.
All right. Well, before we go, what other news stories should we be paying attention attention to. Daryl, let's start with you, your other big story.
Well, I've been actively involved with the felon vote issue, which is Amendment 4 coming up. I am a conservative. I support it. I think it's a very conservative policy in many ways. It's supported by the Koch Foundation, which is a very conservative group. It's supported by the International Association of Chiefs of Police. 2% of the people in the United States have lost the right to vote due to a felony conviction, about 7.5% of minorities. In Florida, it's 10% of our voting age population who have lost the right to vote, and 23% of minorities. That puts us in the extreme policy, and we need to be part of the mainstream, not the extreme. And it's time for a change in Florida.
Travis, your other big story.
I'm looking more local. I think we could see some upheaval in our county commission in District 5. I think District 5, Victor Chris, might not be able to pull this one out. I think the Democrat might pull this one out. And District 7, I think Todd Marks probably pulls that one out in the end.
Okay. All right. And Ernest, your other big story.
Well, October is domestic violence awareness month, and we earlier this month had a horrible spate of what I like to call domestic violence tragedies take place right here in Tampa Bay, and it's an issue that deserves our focus, and I'm challenging other men to have conversations with each other and to have conversations with young men about what a relationship should be. And, you know, women should be seen as companions, not conquest, people, not possessions. And if we can start promoting that message, maybe we can make a dent in this crisis.
All right, Jessica, your other big story.
Well, since we had today that there was just someone in the state of Florida who was arrested for the bombs that have been sent around the country to media stations and to Democratic, whether they be political office holders or Democratic supporters, a large topic of conversation is the incivility that's taken place in our political conversations. And we're only a few days away now from our midterm elections, and things are going to continue, I think, to be heated. And I'm hopeful. There are a lot of very tight races, not only in the state of Florida, but around the country, that people will look at this as an opportunity to come together, to be more civil, and to have that conversation not only between now and the election, but also following the election, to say, how do we all work together if there is a blue majority in the House, but not in the Senate? What is that going to look like, and how can we make better policies that help all Americans?
A really important topic. I wish we had more time for this show, because I think we could have spent a lot more time on these topics. Hey, thanks for watching Florida This Week. Thank you, panelists, for a great show. Your comments are always welcome. Please write us at ftw@wedu.org. Well, that was Florida This Week from this past Friday night on WEDU-TV. And my guests were Jessica Ehrlich. She was the Democrat on that panel. Travis Horn was the Republican. And we heard from columnist Ernest Hooper at the Tampa Bay Times and Daryl Paulson, a professor emeritus of government at USF St. Petersburg. Well, if you've got comments about that show, you can email us in the studio here at dj@wmnf.org. After the tragedy Saturday in Pittsburgh, we're going to talk right now with Rabbi Josh Hershen, who is with the Congregation Rodef Shalom in Tampa, and we're going to find out feelings are in the Jewish community here in Tampa. And Rabbi Hershen, welcome to WMNF. Good to have you here.
Thank you for having me.
Our condolences. It's a terrible, awful thing, and I can't imagine happening to any group, but you know, our condolences go out to you.
Thank you.
So tell me, what are you hearing from members of your congregation and other people in the local Jewish community about Pittsburgh?
In the short time that that has elapsed since this tragic event, I've had numerous text messages and emails and Facebook messages, a lot of sadness and a lot of anger that such a thing can still happen in a world in which we live in 2018. Not very much fear is on the mind right now, more or less a resilience and an idea that we have to band together and work with Jew and Gentile alike to not let these things happen anymore.
Do you think things are getting worse in the U.S.?
I think that in our country right now, there is a lot of divisive nature, and I don't really want to throw blame at any one group for that. I just feel that rather than ever feeling like we have more in common, we always look for what we don't have in common, and we see that in the way that we are with people who, you know, in our Jewish community, in our Christian communities, and all different communities. We see that people get divided up by what they think rather than who they are.
What do you think the best way to begin the healing process is?
I think the best way to begin the healing process is, first of all, a significant amount of tears. The first part of mourning is grief, and we have to live through that grief and recognize it as a real thing. And then it's a matter of feeling the comfort of knowing that other people out there care about us. You know, we always are reminded time and again that while there are a few people that do these horrible, disgusting things, that, you know, there are also an enormous amount of heroes, like the police officers who ran into the building and pursued the gunmen, like the Tampa Bay police officers who were just here this morning meeting with us, and the all of these people who put themselves in the line of danger simply to protect us. And there are also people who don't serve but are our heroes and are out there looking for us. So I really believe the first thing to do is to recall the fact that God created a world for us in which there are great, wonderful people with beautiful hearts ready to do all sorts of things, and not just people out there who want to harm us.
Will the local community, the local Tampa Jewish community, be doing anything to mark the tragedy of Saturday in Pittsburgh?
Well, we have a vigil planned for this evening, and still working on it.
And one last question. I know that during the High Holy Days, there's heavy security at the synagogues, but does this make you more fearful of the everyday services on Shabbat, that you'll have to have higher security here in Tampa?
I can't speak to that right now because those discussions are ongoing. I can tell you that as a Jewish male who wears a yarmulke every single day of his life, I'm always aware of the fact that I'm Jewish and always aware of the fact that might not make every single person happy, but I will never let that change who I am, and I will never let that change the way I behave. And I believe that the synagogues and the different institutions will follow suit, and we will figure out ways, as we already are, very secure places, to continue those conversations.
Rabbi Hirschen, is there anything else that you think the public needs to know at this point?
The public should know that that we as Americans, we as people of faith, we as people of conscience, should all band together and reject any kind of hatred in any way, shape, or form, be it anti-Semitism, homophobia, xenophobia, anything that causes us to question the other is never an acceptable option. We live in a world where we have a whole bunch of different people, and that makes the world a much better place, not a worse place.
Rabbi Josh Hirschen from Congregation Road F Shalom in Tampa, thank you so much for coming on WMNF.
Thank you.
Thanks. Bye-bye. That's Rabbi Hirschen, and you're listening to WMNF in Tampa, 88.5 FM. We're going to open up the phone lines and to take your phone calls. Our phone number, 813-239-9663. Email address, dj@wmnf.org. They have found another package, this one mailed to CNN. This is another package that was sent to CNN, was discovered in the Atlanta post office this morning, just days after the arrest of the pipe bomb suspect. In the last few days, three major hate-filled crimes. Of course, the tragedy in Pittsburgh, in which an anti-Semitic man opened fire at a Pittsburgh synagogue on Saturday morning, killing 11 people and wounding several others. The man was anti-Semitic. He was also a hater of groups that bring in refugees and immigrants, posting many anti-immigrant, anti-refugee messages on his Facebook page. Also, there was a shooting at a church in Jeffersontown, Kentucky, just outside of Louisville. It was a predominantly black First Baptist church, and a man opened fire when he didn't manage to get in the church. The doors were locked. He headed to a Kroger store where he allegedly shot two people, both African-American. Both were killed. Maurice Stallard, 69 years old, and Vicki Jones, 67 years old. And then there was, of course, the arrest of this bomber who was apparently a big fan of President Trump's. And he had sent bombs to many people, including people who have been targeted by President Trump over the years, specifically George Soros, the liberal billionaire financier who's been contributing to causes that promote democracy around the world and in this country. And Soros was the target of an ad that President Trump took out in the closing days of the 2016 campaign. And my question is, do you think that President Trump has taken these attacks seriously enough? Our phone number, 813-239-9663. Our email address, dj@wmnf.org. And I'm going to read some of these emails. Yoda writes, not sure that's his real name or her real name, but it seems that Governor Rick Scott is the worst governor in Florida history, and he'll lie to his own mother to get a vote, writes Yoda. And then Anonymous from the 813 area code writes regarding Florida this week, says, lots of discussion about Hamilton tickets, none about the ethics investigation that DeSantis avoided by resigning his seat in Congress. I would expect better from FTW. All right. Thank you for that. 813-239-9663. And then Adam writes this. The Republican did try and repeal and replace the Affordable Care Act. The replacement would have allowed people with pre-existing conditions and seniors to be charged seven times more. It doesn't really help to be covered if you can be charged seven times more now, does it? Writes Adam, and he goes on to say, I'm tired of hearing them straight lie about wanting to protect pre-existing conditions. Their legislation has spoken for itself. If you have pre-existing conditions, they want you to be charged more, even if it's unaffordable, writes Adam. 813-239-9663 is our phone number, and we're going to open up the phone lines. And my question really, and we can talk also about the Florida governor's race, we can talk about the U.S. Senate race, we could talk about affordable condition, pre-existing conditions, rather. But my question is, has President Trump taken these attacks seriously? The massacre in Pittsburgh, the event outside of Louisville on Thursday, and the mail bombings that have gone on. 813-239-9663. Let's go to Gary in Dunedin. Gary, you're on WMNF. What would you like to say?
Well, man, it's great that the question you just framed is what I was calling about. And I have to say that the mainstream media is continuing to do a bad job of connecting the dots and holding Trump and his followers accountable. I found it astounding that during a week where the pipe bomber dude was basically doing a modified version of a terrorist attack, nobody at that point when the pipe bomb parcel started showing up knew where those things were coming from. And it should have been like if we had known, well, some say Bush and Rice knew about 9/11 before it happened, but if Trump was truly a good man and truly a good president, as soon as he saw that some terrorist was targeting members of the opposition party, if he truly believed in democracy, he would have stopped all of his stupid campaign appearances and his other BS, and he would have convened both his domestic terrorism advisors, the FBI, etc., and said, we are under attack from an internal domestic terrorist using the U.S. mail to attack one political party and the media. So, why didn't he do that, and why did he continue to go out while this terrorist attack was ongoing until the Trump van guy was arrested? Well, maybe he was glad that these people were being targeted. After all, even during the time when the pipe bombs were still being sent and nobody knew who was doing it, he was out at his campaign events slagging some of the people who were receiving the bombs. And so were his PACs continuing to slag Soros and lie about Soros, even when Soros was the intended victim of a terrorist attack. So he's not just not taking them seriously, he might be welcoming them, and as Tom Hartman has explained, stochastic terrorism. It's like in the mob, when the head guy in the mob family says, you know, that guy Vinny, he isn't paying his bribes like he's supposed to. Maybe you ought to pay him a visit and take him out in a boat. Now, he doesn't have to say, take him out in a boat and kill him and throw him overboard, but the dude he's talking to understands it. And just like Dylann Roof, who went and shot a bunch of elderly people in a black church, understood what he was hearing from his white nationalist friends, that guy with all those Trump stickers and hate Hillary things on his van, he knows what Trump is saying. And he went out, and he started his little Trump war. And we are in a bad time, and the media is not painting this picture. But it's a true picture.
All right. Gary, thanks a lot. Thanks for your thoughts. All right. So Gary set the conversation. What do you think? 813-239-9663. Email address dj@wmnf.org. John in Ozona writes, it's almost unbelievable hearing Mr. Horn say he was more concerned about the two tickets than the great businessman Governor Scott skimming a few dollars. That's John in Ozona. You know, going back to Florida this week, if you are worried about Andrew Gillum allegedly taking tickets from an FBI undercover agent, tickets may be worth a total of $2,000, maybe. And if you are worried about a unreported fundraiser for Gillum in the amount of $4,000 that he should have put on his campaign financial forms, and if you are worried about a trip to Costa Rica, maybe, that he maybe didn't reimburse for, I think the question remains, did he exchange a vote for these gifts? Did he vote a certain way that a developer wanted him to vote or somebody else wanted him to vote? And so far, I haven't seen that evidence. And the other thing is, and I don't, you know, whataboutism is not always fair or exact, but if you look at the alleged misdeeds of, let's say, somebody like Governor Rick Scott and his company ripping off Medicare for $300 million, if you look at the alleged crimes of Gillum versus the alleged crimes of Scott, Scott got elected, many of his supporters knowing that his company ripped off Medicare to the tune of $300 million. So, you know, what is it? What was the actual wrongdoing? If I were, well, let's take some more phone calls. 813-239-9663. I'm not going to tell you what I think about free tickets. Now, if Gillum did take free tickets for a vote, then I would say, okay, there's a problem there. But right now, we don't know exactly what these free tickets, alleged free tickets, involve. Let's go to Teresa in St. Petersburg. Hey, Teresa, you're on WMNF. What would you like to say?
Well, first, I don't trust Republicans with health care. They don't, you know, they want to appeal Obamacare, which I have because I got pre-existing conditions, and if it goes away, I'm done. I'm not even going to bother getting insurance. And again, they want to take away Medicare, Medicaid, Social Security, you know, so healthcare, they're just lying, and they're lying about it, and that's the bottom line. Second, I don't care about Gillum taking some Hamilton tickets because of what you just said about Rick Scott and ripping off Medicare. I think that's much more of offense than taking some Hamilton tickets. I don't even care about any of that. And third, the hate crime, the hate that is going on in this country is totally on Trump's shoulders. The hate that he has been spousing for the last 2 years has come to this point. And I know for 8 years, the media hated on President Obama, just hated on him. Yet, I don't recall any Democrats sending pipe bombs to Republican leadership. I don't recall I don't recall any of that. And I don't recall President Obama coming out and calling Fox News and right-wing media enemies of the people and calling people names. He didn't do any of that. So it's on Trump's shoulder, but it's also to the voters that voted for him and support him, this kind of stuff. It's on them, too. And that's just the way I feel about it.
Teresa, let me ask you about these three events over the weekend. Black people targeted, pipe bombs sent to people with whom the bomber reportedly disagreed with, and then the shooting down of people in a synagogue because a guy hated Jews. Three incidents of terrorism? Is this terrorism?
Yes, it is.
And do you think the media is calling it terrorist?
Honestly, I didn't listen that much this weekend. I just was overwhelmed and just, you know, but I know, I don't know if they have called it terrorism. Maybe some have, but it is terrorism.
It is clearly right-wing terrorism. There's no doubt about it. Yeah,
it is. And when the left, if they start retaliating and sending pipe bombs to the right, we're at an all-out war between Democrats and Republicans, and people are going to have to pick their sides. And if you think families are divided now, which I've come from one of those families, I try really hard not to talk to them. I live here in Florida. I have no family here, so I don't talk to them all that much. But when that starts, it's going to divide families like never before. And it's not just Trump. It's the leadership in the House and the Senate. It's the Republican leadership. They're not coming out and talking.
Yeah, Kevin McCarthy just deleted a tweet over the weekend that was targeted against Tom Steyer, George Soros, and Michael Bloomberg. And when he realized that he had attacked three people of the Jewish faith, he deleted the tweet. So
exactly, yeah. But they are the problem, and they're inciting these people. I'm not saying that hate hasn't been around our country. It's been everywhere for decades and decades. But what Trump has done, he has escalated it. He has made it okay for people to walk into churches and synagogues and mosques and just kill people because I don't like your religion. And Christians are not much better. They feel they're being under attack. And it's like, we're not. It's just not, because a lot of all this rhetoric about, you know, don't bake this guy a cake because he's gay, it's against my religion. It's just ridiculous. You're supposed to love your neighbor.
All right. Teresa, thanks a lot. Thank you.
Okay.
Thanks for your phone call, and thanks for getting it off your chest. Let's go to Tom in St. Petersburg. Hey, Tom, you're on WMNF 88.5 FM.
Hello.
Hi.
I wanted to call in and... I don't want to diminish the events over the weekend, but there was a massive stock market sell-off, especially during the sort of pipe bomb mailing. And I just feel like maybe that deserves some attention as well.
Okay, over human life. Okay, all right.
It's like I say, not over human life, but what I'm saying is that it's that stock market sell-off affects everybody. And
everybody who has stocks and relies on the stocks for their income. Okay, all right.
Well, and retirement funds. And what I'm saying is that Trump's one, quote, success, unquote, is the hangover from Barack's economy. And if the stock market is a man-made sell-off, that gets rid of his only success. And if NBC Universal is being sold, they're not going to talk about it. So,
all right, Tom, thank you. Thank you for your comments. All right, so Tom says, I think what Tom is saying is we should pay attention to the economy, and we will. Right now, I think we're going to pay attention to the three terrorist incidents that happened in the last few days. And let's mull on that for a little bit and take some time to recognize the loss of human life. Let's go to Bob in Tarpon Springs. Hey, Bob, you're on WMNF. What would you like to say?
Hey, Rob. To the three incidents that happened over the weekend, which were just crazy, I think people have become more and more isolated in their thinking and ideology, and they're surrounding themselves with people that think the same. They're watching media that tells them what they want to hear. They don't want to believe or read anything else, and I think we're in the middle of a perfect storm. I mean, we have a president that you know, he's certainly not egging things on like this, but he is egging on divide like, you know, like nobody has in our history, as far as I know.
Yeah, you know, I keep waiting for somebody, maybe an ex-president. I know President Obama's been out there speaking a lot, but I keep waiting. There's a few other elder statesmen and women from the Republican Party, from the Democratic Party, who've been pretty quiet, especially on the Republican side. And I keep waiting for people that might disagree with President Trump, disagree with his dog whistles, to come out and say, you know what, this climate of hostility towards immigrants, towards other kinds of people who are not part of the kind of the mainstream Washington crowd now, it's got to stop. I keep waiting for some of the elder, you know, the people that we've seen on TV, you know, throughout the, you know, last 20 or 30 years to come forward and say, hey, I'm here and I'm going to speak out against it.
Yeah, no, instead you have Newt Gingrich just doubling down.
Yeah, I mean, the Trump party is in control, but I'm waiting for people who are conservative but not part of the Trump mindset to come forward. Yeah.
And last thing, I saw something that's pretty interesting that I'm not sure what it means, but there's a video of Trump going up into Air Force One with an umbrella. And, you know, traditionally presidents have always run up the ramp, you know, as a show of health or power, whatever it may be. But they, you know, they have a tradition of running up the ramp. Trump never has, but he's carrying this umbrella. And he gets to the top of the ramp, and he's about to enter Air Force One. And he just lets go of the umbrella and walks onto the plane.
Yeah, it looks like he doesn't know how to close it.
Well,
yeah, I've seen it. It's weird. It's weird.
Close it, but it to me, that seems to go to state of mind or lack of state of mind.
Yeah. All right.
I don't know.
Bob, thanks a lot. Thanks for the call. Great to hear from you. Amin writes this, the only way that Trump will take it seriously if it was Muslims doing the violence. Those guys weren't even called terrorists, writes Amin. Amin, thank you so much for that. And Clint writes this, has there been any news about angry liberal mobs? Trump was taking them very seriously, yet any right-wing attack gets an emotionless tweet and then gets ignored, writes Clint. I think there's this attempt to say that there are angry liberal mobs out there. And there are people, I think, and it's happened, who see somebody at a movie theater or a restaurant and shout at them. Well, that's kind of rude behavior, but it's not bombing them. It's not shooting them. And as much as you probably don't want to have your dinner interrupted if you're the Secretary of Interior, if you're Mike Pence or whoever's dinner is getting interrupted, that's a protest, yeah, but it's not violent. Sending bombs is violent. Let's go to, we're going to go to Gary in Tampa. Gary, what would you like to say?
Hi.
Gary?
Hello?
Yeah, Gary, what would you like to say?
All right, so I have to say I agree with Teresa. She kind of covered what I would want to say, except I would like to go one step further. You know, yes, Trump is a bad guy. He is the fault of this. Now, my next comment is not directed towards Democrats. It is directed towards those people who voted for Trump and supported Trump. And the Jewish people who voted for Trump because he was going to move the embassy to Jerusalem. Well, you aligned yourself with a right-wing compromised person.
You know, I think in fairness, most Jewish Americans voted Democratic in the last election.
But I'm going to knocking off some groups, people, because I'm also going to complain about the Christians who voted for Trump so that we could have a Supreme Court justice who would get rid of the abortion laws. And they're ignoring the reality that you're aligning yourself with a person who is aligned with the alt-right, which is a racist group of people. And these individuals who really made the difference between Hillary getting elected and Trump getting elected really are getting, I hate to say it like this, your just deserve. Because the truth is, if you don't acknowledge from the very beginning, the man was using misogynist terms to describe women, and it was clear he has no respect for women. The man was using racist terms for people of color and people of other religions other than white Anglo-Saxon.
All right, Gary, we're out of time. Thank you so much. Thanks for calling in. I'm sorry, we wish we had more time because we've got every line lit and a bunch of emails I haven't read. Thanks to Frank Knox. He's been our phone producer today. If you want to comment about today's show, please call us up at 813-238-8001. Record your comment on extension 115. And I'll play your comments back tomorrow morning at 11 o'clock. Coming up in the next hour, a debate. Two people who want to be in Congress, so one already a member and one a challenger. So we're here.